Welcome to podcast recorded live at the Center for Spiritual Living in Portland, Oregon. We have many resources available for our online audience on our website at csoportland.org. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its video podcast, you can donate online at csoportland.org. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living. For more information, visit csoportland.org.
We'll get to it later, but actually one of the traits of the warrior is someone that is strong enough to cry. Because to cry is to know the possibility of the beauty inherent in this world and to be aware that we have missed the mark. So tears are actually an awareness of both the reality of human folly and the possibility of sublime beauty, that actually they're one, because sometimes you're not sure which is what you're crying over, right? Am I crying over my pain or the beauty of that? It's actually both, right? And that's what it means to be a love warrior. So today is also Ritual Sunday, so that means we're going to step in to some ritual practice. And what is ritual? Well, ceremony is the motions, the words, the activities that are handed down to us. In some cases, these have an inner purpose. In some cases, they have an outer purpose. Getting a driver's license is certainly a ceremony. Is it a ritual? Well, it could be if we actually taught the young person the movements in mind of what it means to be ushered into being trusted as an adult. But in the modern culture, we have lost that. So actually, to begin, I'm going to surprise my first student, Soleil. Come on up. I need you to ring my singing bowl. Get up here, Soleil. And can we get the vocal mic turned on? I'm going to have Soleil ring the singing bowl that I taught her and her brother Malachi and so many youth here how to meditate with. What's up, Soleil? Thanks for coming up. All right, so we're going to start off with a singing bowl and just the om. Let's get this mic down a bit, so just hold it up there. There we go. And om, if you're not familiar with it, om, it's the sacred tone in Hinduism. In their belief, that is literally the vibration that the divine mind sang into the emptiness that vibrated our reality into being. You could also think of it as the first frequency of the Big Bang, that initial release of energy that everything comes from. And in their belief, when we say the Om mantra, we're vibrating our body and our consciousness back to that original creative space. Sometimes we think we need to go forward to something to realize our next good, but actually sometimes we have to go to that which is the most foundational, which is the moment of creation. And what's behind that moment of creation? What could it be other than love? And just join in with me. You don't have to do it together. Just, oh. Now we're in one vibration, and that's the beginning of ritual, is to understand that when we're stepping into ancient ritual, we're stepping out of our individuality, don't worry, it's still there, and into our universality, and the easiest way to do that is to share a vibration. Now, the next step is actually to claim the space, and this is where it actually takes training, because if we are part of everything, is it not our right to claim and say, actually, for this time, for this place, for this people, I will set aside the matter, energy, and consciousness of the oneness for a purpose. If we don't claim that right, someone else is. They're going to claim it through television. They're going to claim it through propaganda. They're going to claim it through the shadows on the wall of Plato's cave. So when we claim a space, it's very powerful. I'm going to do it. My practitioner, Catherine Richard, asked me, Sean, maybe it's time you stopped holding back. So that's actually why the sword is now off the altar and is now with me. It's actually a great symbol. It's been on the altar for over a decade. Actually, Dave couldn't be here. He's on an adventure today, but he's actually the one that gave this to me, and he'll be watching this. So now I will claim this space. So just take a breath because it's going to be powerful. I now take control of this space. The dimensions of height, width, and length do not function here as they normally do. Time does not progress upon its normal course, for I alone am regent of this space. As it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end, world without end. Suddenly we're in a pocket that's just ours. Thank you, Soleil. So our talk today is, what does it mean to be a spiritual warrior? Let's briefly talk about what is spiritual. Perhaps one of the most burlesque words in America. But it's actually very simple and very essential. It's an aspect of experience that has something to do with consciousness. And it's a very simple question. Right now you feel yourself sitting in a chair. What is the thing feeling the chair? You have a thought in your head, oh, what am I going to have for lunch? What is the thing having that thought? Maybe you have a feeling, oh man, that calling into ritual space was very intense. What is the thing having that feeling? Consciousness is that inner space within which our experience arises and is integrated. And when we're talking about the spiritual dimension of life, we're talking about consciousness. Spirituality then often is used as an adjective to describe a very high state. Oh, when LaRonda hit that high note, it something moved through me. That music became spiritual. When I was watching the Spurs play OKC last night, there's moments where you see an athlete do a perfect motion, where you can tell in that moment they were one with everything, and through their body, spirit moved. It was almost spiritual, right? In that moment of connection with a friend, where you go beyond words and it's just a sense of communion. When we say spiritual, we're meaning when the experience of life transcends our sense of limitation, and we become aware of that larger pattern of unity. And it's actually the thing that we crave. It's why you're here. It's why you engage art. It's why you keep forgiving your friends and coming back to love. Because we want that transcendence to move out of our individuality and experience that unity. What is a warrior? Again, another word that has been corrupted. If you want to know why the flock has gone so far astray, you need to only look at the corruption of our education. And that's why Next Gen, that's why the teen program, that's why the youth program is so important. We need to inoculate our children not only against physical viruses, but against the mental viruses. A warrior is not some buff brawler that likes to fight. That's a brawler, that's a thug, maybe even a fighter if they're very good at it and get paid. A warrior is someone that stands for a cause that they value greater than their own life. When I was instructed by a grandmaster in Kung Fu, I had to take an oath before he would teach me certain advanced techniques that I would literally use this to defend and protect the innocent, the young, the elderly, the infirm, the sick, those that could not defend themselves, even if it means I relinquish my life. And I had to say that oath in front of my entire martial arts class. And then he would teach me the real things. But first, the master had to see the discipline in the student and the understanding that until you accept that there is something more important than you, you're just another sheep. But if you want to become a sheepdog, if you want to become a warrior and you want power, you must first have discipline and humility. And what was the first thing the warrior protected? What I'm looking at right here. Within every community, there were those that said, I love you all so much, the family, the tribe, the community, that if something comes to try and hurt you all, I will be the one that says, you shall not pass. And if it means I have to die, so be it. But I'm not going to die easy. I'm going to spend time every day letting the power of the oneness into this body, so when that does happen, it's not going to go down easy. The archetype of the spiritual warrior is essential in every culture, and it's one that is almost entirely absent in modernity, except the Jedi. That's why Star Wars is such a powerful mythos. We understand that there is something powerful about physical and spiritual power becoming one in selfless service. That's what the warrior originally was. And it's a covenant between the individual and the all. And when you take on that covenant, incredible power moves through you. The power that I've had to stop people with weapons when I was unarmed. The power that I had in Occupy Portland to tell 5,000 people, we're not going to fight the police, we're going to go protest the banks. To have that power requires great humility. But it is one that stands for light and love, for the good, the true, and the beautiful. That's what the true warrior does. And in Shambhala, the path of the sacred warrior, the key to warriorship and the first principle of Shambhala vision is not being afraid of who you are. Ultimately, that is the definition of bravery, not being afraid of yourself. Because one that can stand truly within their own being, who can stand against them? So can I not be afraid of myself? Because that self is the one in its many forms, a being of light, a being of love, a being of consciousness. So what is our battle then? If we are here to be spiritual warriors, if we're here to say, I stand for love, I stand for light, I stand for truth. Before you concern yourself with the outer world, you must first look within. As Judah Krishnamurti said, if there's turmoil within, what can there be without? There are so many people that desperately want to help this world. I saw them in Occupy Portland. They had not done their inner work and they projected that inner turmoil into the cause. A movement can only be as strong as its members, only as wise, only as loving. And as Ken Wilber says, you wake up, then you need to heal up. Then you need to grow up. Then you can show up. If we skip that part of healing up, we're going to carry our wounds with us. There's an old, old, old story. There are two wolves within you. One wolf has a very dark coat, glowing red eyes. It is a wolf of pain, of hunger, of anger, of resentment. It has that fiery red power of darkness. Oh, and you know this wolf. Don't you dare lie to me. We have all had moments where we let that wolf take over, and oh, it's powerful. We bared our fangs. We probably bit because something was threatening us. And there's power in it. This is the power of the Sith. We cannot deny the power of that. Then there's this other wolf. It has a snow-white coat, piercing blue eyes, and it's a wolf of love, of light, of truth, of forgiveness, of joy. Every action, every thought, every feeling you allow to move through you feeds one of those wolves. Right? What did Gandhi say? The line between good and evil moves through every human heart. The greatest power you have is the choice of which side of that equation. Now, we know we're talking about a duality, and beneath all duality is actually a polarity, right? It's not black and white. It's actually a rainbow spectrum, but we have to acknowledge this fundamental polarity within our being, because the choices that we make become the inner motivations from which our actions take form. Neuroscience has already shown it. Before you even say something, a neural circuit has fired in your brain about 4 milliseconds before you say it. The choice has already been made. So how do you wire your brain? What am I cultivating? Which of those wolves am I feeding? And to quote Marvel movie, Doctor Strange, Doctor Strange is looking at the wise one. And he's like, can you help me conquer my demons? Right? He's finally met the wise one, the ancient one. And the wise one laughs and goes, no, you can never conquer your demons. You can learn to live above them. And I would say that those demons are actually your allies in a fierce form. In Tibetan Buddhism, you may see these statues or depictions of these monstrous, demonic forms. But in their belief, those are actually Buddhas that are so compassionate, they incarnate as something scary to wake you the fuck up. To say, hey, I'm the one that's telling you right now, you're giving into hate. You're giving into fear. Why are you doing that? Man, you want a hard job? Imagine being the spiritual monster. But that's still the oneness. That's still spirit in its infinite form taking the hard job. And guess what? Some of those beings incarnate on this planet and end up becoming elected officials going, are you going to stop me? There's someone taking our entire country for a joyride, and no one's stopping him. So where's the lesson? Can you imagine the karmic debt that person's taking on to cause all this suffering? Because we don't get to go to the stars and spread a galactic civilization if we don't know how to stop incarnate evil. Now, we know at a spiritual level, evil is not real. There's only the light. But at an incarnate level, sentient life has the right to feed the evil wolf. Because if we don't have the right to do that, we don't have the right to consciously choose the other side. And there's no greater existential thrill than all of reality baiting you into the darkness, and you say, I am a love warrior, and I stand for light. That's a rush when you hold that line. And if you're hearing this message, chances are you've been one of the people that has done that. There is no enemy, but those inner demons and those outer demons are our spiritual sparring partners. I used to do this at the treatment facility where I worked with traumatized, troubled teens. If they made it all the way to phase four, these were the students that were putting in heavy work, I get to a point where I'd say, okay, I'm now your emotional sparring partner. They're like, what does that mean? And I said, if you can't learn to say no to me, super safe Sean, what's going to happen when you're out in the world? So when I'm making them their sandwich for lunch, I would start to put something on there they didn't ask for. I'm like, tell me not to. Tell me not to. If you can't tell me not to put mayonnaise on your sandwich, how are you going to go out into the world and tell evil to stop? So we actually must thank our spiritual sparring partners, because those wounds within us, those shadow aspects, are there to make us stronger. And the path there is actually to end the inner battle and make peace and say, no, my inner children, you too are a part of me. How can I nurture you? How can I love you? What skills do you need? Become that loving inner parent and raise up those parts of you that are acting out, and they actually end up having some of your greatest gifts. So that's the inner battle that we have to fight first, is am I holding the line within my own being? Am I denying false beliefs? Am I allowing but not following negative emotion? Am I halting judgmental thoughts? That inner line is the first battle of the spiritual warrior, and that's why they teach you meditation first. My Sifu said, first you have to still your mind. If you can still your mind, then I will teach you to stand. And if you can stand properly, then I will teach you to walk. And if you can walk properly, maybe then I will teach you how to use the fist. But it turns out if you simply know how to stand, most people will never raise a fist against you because they will sense that spiritual power. So now our first spiritual practice is we are going to go within to that space because you know where it is. Should I zig? Should I zag? So I want you to close your eyes and go to that inner space within yourself where choice lives. That's the inner altar. That is the gateway between you and the infinite, that you were blessed with conscious creative choice. Now, in this space, I want you to light a candle. And that candle is the light, it is the love, it is consciousness, it is wisdom. And with each breath, I want you to see that light grow out from your center, slowly enveloping more and more of you. And keep growing it until it's a halo, a bubble around your whole body. Now see if you can start to expand it to the people sitting next to you, that they too are held in this space of light and love, that you choose good not only for you but for them. Who wouldn't want that? What a blessing to know that the person next to me is holding me in such high loving regard. Now expand that, breathe it in more until you're holding this entire space. Can you expand it to the whole neighborhood? How about the whole city? I know, now we're stretching. This is yoga for consciousness. Let's get real big. Can you hold the whole planet in your own inner light? How about all of creation? And I would go postmodern. Hold all. Don't limit it. Now come back to the self and see how easy it is to hold just you in that. If we practice regularly a yoga of consciousness, which is one definition of ritual, the worldly choices become very easy. The control scheme wants to limit you, to make you feel small and the hard choices feel big. So when those hard choices come, I want you to pause and see that inner light expand. And by the time you're holding the whole world in infinite light and love, suddenly that choice becomes easy because you've realized how big you are. All right, why don't we come back? So now that we've looked at this inner battle, let's read some Ernest Holmes. In the silence of the soul's communion with the great cause of all being, into the stillness of the absolute, into the secret place of the Most High, back of the din and ceaseless roar of life, we shall find a resting place and a place of real spiritual power. That's where I just took you. If we begin our day with a spiritual practice that is that simple, that is a few minutes long, the day suddenly becomes very easy. But the control mechanism wants you to wake up in a panic, chug your caffeine, and just start reacting. A few minutes, maybe even just in the car outside of work, do I want to be 3 minutes late and spiritually integrated and in tune with the infinite, or do I want to come in a hot mess? We get to make that choice. From Shambhala, The Path of the Sacred Warrior. Every human being has a basic nature of goodness, which is undiluted and unconfused. That goodness contains tremendous gentleness and appreciation. There is a gentleness at the center of a spiritual warrior. The discipline it takes in years of training to have martial power is the discipline to never use it unless you have to. We must practice that same discipline spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. Nonviolence isn't just a physical commitment. What does it mean to make a commitment to nonviolence emotionally or mentally? I refuse to hold a negative thought for another. I refuse to project a negative emotion onto another. That is a difficult commitment. But that commitment and the discipline we gain from it makes us so much stronger in the world. And that's the essence of spiritual practice, right? So if I want to get good at martial arts, I need to go to the training space, I need to train at home and do the movement over and over again. Okay, I'm going to do this, right? What did Bruce Lee say? I do not fear the person that has trained 10,000 kicks. I fear the person that has trained one kick 10,000 times. What happens if you train being loving 10,000 times? No person could stop you from doing it because it's innate in the way of your nervous system. This is why Jesus said we have to forgive 7 times 70 times. And here's the far out part. Do the math, that's 490. What have neuroscientists discovered? A negative emotion can be up to 500 times more powerful than a positive emotion in wiring our nervous system. Somehow, Jesus, as a master teacher, intuited his way to that golden ratio math within that now our modern science has validated, and that's science of mind, when we see the outer and the inner truth unify. Maybe I have to forgive 500 times that dumb fool that said that thing that hurt me, right? But actually, how many is 500? Well, shoot, if I do it 10 times a day for a month, I'm at 300. Well, shoot, if I do 15, I'm at 450. Okay, one of those days, I'll go for broke. Do you mean within a month, I can change my nervous system? Yeah, I did it. I was actually legally disabled for 3.5 years, and the doctors were like, dude, you're fucked. And I was like, I don't think you actually know. I grilled them on their science of mind. I was like, okay, can you point to a part of my brain that's broken? No. Can you explain how a neural code realizes consciousness? No. Okay, so then maybe you don't know the whole truth. And the doctor was like, well, I don't. And I said, okay, so I'm going to go to other avenues. So I went to the ancient techniques and I rewired my nervous system with our teaching because I trusted Jesus's math. So I said, every person that traumatized me, I have to forgive 500 times. So each month I picked up one of you all and I was like, okay, it's your month, mofo. And by the end of that month, I had nothing but love and forgiveness, because there too was a child of the one trying to get through the day and do their best. And on a certain day, I was the one that had to pick up the slack. And by the end of that, I was so in touch with all of my own shortcomings that I finally understood why Jesus preached forgiveness and why I view forgiveness as part of the practice of the warrior. We have to massage out the scar tissue of our nervous system, because being human is fun, but it's also really messy. And that's what he was talking about when he said, judge not, yet ye be judged. Forgive yourself, forgive others, forgive the world, and you reclaim that part of your nervous system. We all feel those parts of our hearts that are calcified with the scar tissue of the wounds of being human. That's the price we pay for getting to be here, because actually human life is fucking amazing. The food, the music, the culture, being hugged, someone actually caring about you and showing up when they are exhausted, and somehow them showing up for you vitalizes both of you. This is an incredible experience, and it requires maintenance. Raise your hand if you take your car for its oil change. Raise the hand the last time you did an oil change for your own heart. A couple of you. A couple of you. Good. Yes. Our practitioners raise their hands. Yes. Very good. We must practice a spiritual hygiene akin to our physical hygiene. A few minutes a day to wash away the sins of the world and return to that clean state, so that when we go out into the world and are encountering another yourself, I can actually be totally available, because I'm not carrying all my bullshit to lunch. Right? You've had that where you show up for lunch with someone and they're just a mess and just unloading all of their garbage. And you're like, this is not the experience I'm seeking. But we've done that too. So clean up. Take a spiritual shower. Now we're going to get heavy. We've talked about this spirituality, this worship, this inner battle. Let's take a breath. I'm going to say some things that are going to hurt. But pain is the awareness that something is out of place. I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to integrate you. And it starts with a story. I'm driving two teens that are in the audience right now back from teen group. And me being Sean, I'm like, I'm aware, I'm almost 39, I'm aware that I'm not with it anymore. To quote Abe Simpson, I used to be with it, then what it was changed. Now, what it is scares me. And I love it. I'm starting to see some things the kids do, and I'm getting a little freaked out. I'm like, yes, do it. Make me uncomfortable. It would be such a disappointment if our youth didn't challenge our comfort. We want them to move past where we are, even if that terrifies us. Because we remember when we were the youth doing it. So I'm talking to these two youths. And I'm like, so like, what's cool in high school right now? And one of them says, oh, we're all reading the Epstein files. And I go, what, you're all talking about it? And this teen goes, yeah, because we know the adults aren't going to do anything about it. Now, some of you that know me well probably know that I don't feel ethically called out very often. I'm usually the person that other people come to with ethical dilemma. I hadn't been that called out probably in a decade since my spiritual mentor, and I went home and sat with it. The Epstein files. The Rothschild banking dynasty. If you go look up the countries that own their own currency, the last several wars we've been involved with were the countries that now no longer own their currency. Wake up. There's propaganda, and then there's why there's war. Poverty? You know, we throw away more food than there are hungry people. Homelessness? There are more empty domiciles in America than there are homeless people. The city of Portland spends $700 million a year on the homeless problem. Do the math. You could build an apartment structure. They don't want to solve the problem. The greatest lie ever told is that humans are the problem. There are dark forces that these leaders have committed themselves to. I will not speak those names in a sacred space. Humans aren't causing the suffering in this world. We're being brainwashed into not challenging it. We could solve the homeless problem in a few years, but there's an industry benefiting from it. When you have late-stage unchecked capitalism and you put money as the highest good, you engender suffering. Money is a commodity. It's a representation. It's not a thing in itself. How are there so many dark forces swirling around us? It's the death throes of the old order. And the death throes of one way are the birth pangs of another. If we can hold that space, right? I'm looking at a doula right now who's also been, right, who's been at birth, who's been at death. And if you've been around someone who's very close to dying or a child very close to being born, there's the same energy because they're opening up. And as a society, we're in that space. We're in that doula space. Can we allow the old order to die without burning it all to the ground and transition it into the next stage of our experience? But how do we do that? Lord of the Rings. Frodo, I can't do this, Sam. Sam, I know it's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here, but we are here. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered, full of darkness and danger they were, and sometimes you didn't want to know the end, because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing, this shadow. A new day will come, and when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something, even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folks in those stories had lots of chances to turn back, only they didn't. They were going on because they were holding on to something. But what are they holding on to, Sam? That there is some good world, that there is some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. The good is worth fighting for. And in fact, what else is worth fighting for? That song, Love Warriors, my mom used to play it for me when I was a kid. I remember I asked her, I was like, Mom, what does it mean to be a love warrior? And she's like, Sean, love's the only thing worth fighting for. Everything else is nothing. But if we don't fight for it, we don't get to have it. We have become complacent. We have become domesticated. And we have come to believe that we are entitled to that which others fought for. Oh, I'm just going to coast this lifetime. You know, we've gotten a lot of rights. Let's just keep on going. That is arrogant privilege. Go talk to a person of color. Go talk to a woman. Go talk to a disabled person. And they will tell you, we got a long way to go. And y'all are just realizing that you've been in a coma of privilege. The blood of our ancestors got us here. And every generation has to pay its price. And if we're smart, it doesn't have to be a high price. But the longer we wait, the greater the interest on the bill. So we can't wait any longer. Ephesians, this is a letter from the Apostle Paul. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. At the highest level of the one, it is all love. But don't for a second think that there are things between human and the oneness. And that line of good and evil moves through them too. And if you want to know who our leaders are following, they're following an ancient Babylonian sacrificial religion. It infected the Aztecs. It infected the Babylonians. When you have a priestly class for long enough, they contact higher consciousness. And those higher consciousnesses are just like you and me, but they're a bit higher up the tree of life. And if you pick the wrong one to follow, look out. It's the same thing that happened to Atlantis. Morpheus from The Matrix. The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us, even now in this very room. You see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. What truth? Neo says. Morpheus, that you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into a bondage, into a prison that you cannot taste, touch, or see. A prison for your mind. So how do we emancipate ourselves from this control mechanism, from this brainwashing that has taught you that you are limited, that has taught you humans are evil, that has taught you we can't get our finances in order, that has taught you all this limitation because they are afraid of your power? How do we break free of this? Ernest Holmes. If we find ourselves surrounded by confusion, we should meditate on peace until we feel a sense of peace. Then as the mind returns to its objective state, it brings an atmosphere of peace with it, which dispels the confusion just as light dispels the darkness. Thus, our meditation becomes a practical thing. It has an actual value, a daily experience. When the outer battle becomes so much that we begin to falter, it is not the outer battle that is faltering, it is the inner one. So you have to retreat from the outer world and go within, back to that light that we cultivated. And then you have to have the moment of humility and say, actually, some outer battles are too much for just me. It wasn't Martin Luther King that got us the civil rights. It was the million people marching behind him and the tens of thousands of women of color that were doing all that organizing work. They want you to believe in the hero mythos because the corruption can kill a hero. It cannot kill a whole movement. Was it Mahatma Gandhi or all the people that marched with him to the sea and meditated with him while the water evaporated into salt? And he said, how can you tax this? Was it Jesus or the disciples and all of his followers that continued this message? Was it Ernest Holmes or the thousands of Centers for Spiritual Living that are doing it? We need community. And so our next practice is actually about that. What I want you to do is start to make eye contact with the people around you and say, I stand with you for the good. And just look them in the eye and you say it and they say it back. Go. What are you waiting for? You feel how much stronger you suddenly feel? When the outer battle becomes too much, go within and return to that practice and then turn to those near you and say, you know what? I'm raising the banner. One person can't move another into an apartment. You got to get the community together, right? One hand can't raise the barn side. We have to remember the goodness of our communal effort. That is one of the other great lies we are being told, is that humans in groups are awful. No, we're amazing. We do incredible work together. And when you join other humans in that collective work, you get reminded about how just special we are. That's what it means to be a spiritual warrior, to unwaveringly commit yourself to the good within yourself, the good within the people around you, and the good that is within this world. And if we hold that commitment in every thought, word, and deed that we do, that's how you manifest the kingdom of heaven on earth. I'm going to close. I have been wondering for a long time when we're going to hear rap at CSL Portland. I'd hear the old folks say, oh, no, we're not ready for that. It's too soon. Well, I'm going to ease us in by doing a little spoken word. Okay. Does anyone know what rap stands for?
No.
Rhythm and poetry. It's an American art form. It's an oppressed people proclaiming their freedom and truth. Now, it got co-opted by the commercialism, but when you go listen to the original or go put on some really good Tupac, it's prophetic. It's people demanding their freedom, and that's why it had to be co-opted. This is from Brother Ali's Letter to My Countrymen. The situation of oppressed people shows what we feel when it means to be a human being. What does it mean to be an American? I think the struggle to be free is our inheritance. And if we say how it really is, we know our lily skin still gives us privilege. Advantages given to the few that are built into the roots of our biggest institutions. That's the truth in life. We got to choose. Do I fight in the movement or think I'm entitled to it? This is not a practice life. This is the big game. We got to attack it right. Each one of us is headed for the grave. This old crooked world won't be saved by the passive type. There's no more waiting, folks. It's now or never. It's now or never, and you know that, and I'm just here to remind you. It's a lot of feeling at once. So one of the other practices of the sacred warrior is to keep your eye on beauty, because this world will bombard you with the ugly. And just like these flowers, just like the music, when we dose ourselves of beauty, we're feeding that inner wolf of light. And so if you feel yourself veering towards darkness, maybe you just need a dose of beauty. So I'm going to invite Laron to steal up here, and we're going to do our song. Are you ready? Yeah, yeah. Here we go. We're going a little over. Boo-hoo. Oh, Sean, you got to stop now. You know, that clock says we're out of time. Oh, the audacity. So this song is based on a state of consciousness I experienced when I was seeing the perfection in everything with my friend Parth. I know you're going to listen to this. And then about a year and a half ago during a summer solstice service, I just told Laronda, hold the mic when this happens. And out of nowhere, she channeled this duet. Oh, wait, I need my microphone. Yeah, no, Bo was coming over. He's like, Sean, you're feeling it so much you forgot your microphone. There it is. So here's a little dose of beauty to just kind of let everything I've said stew together and come into the oneness. And this is called, when Laronda sings it, it's Let Love Wash Over You. Just let the beauty wash over you and integrate everything we've talked about today.
As you
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you happen to be in the Portland, Oregon area, we'd love to have you visit in person. The Portland Center for Spiritual Living is located at 6211 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Our inspirational service is at 11 a.m. every Sunday. We also have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the online tab. We have a variety of content dedicated specifically for our podcast listeners. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its podcast, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Our website is also the place to learn more about what's going on at the center or to contact us. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are in your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.